It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker with 4 years. Let's give it up for Cynthia.
Hi, my name is Cynthia. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I walked into my first 12-step meeting in 1991. I don't know where I was going with that. So, anyway, early on, I realized that I was maladjusted. I wasn't comfortable in my skin. I wasn't comfortable around other people. I wasn't comfortable by myself. I was a pretty miserable human being, and I'm not really sure why. My mother told me that I was born angry. You know, maybe I was. I don't know. But bottom line of that is I was about 12, and I thought, well, maybe if I give myself to God, I'll get baptized and everything will change. Well, it didn't. So, because I didn't make any changes. I just got a Bible and they sent me home, and that was it. So I discovered drug, sex, and rock and roll, and that made some changes. I had a spiritual experience with drug, sex, and rock and roll. I finally felt like I was at peace. And that was my goal in life, was to find the perfect buzz. I heard somebody say one time that they love the 99. And that is when you go in for surgery and they give you anesthetic and they say, okay, we want you to count from 100. And you go 100, 99, and you're out. And I was always trying to find the 99. You know, I was either at 100 and I wasn't loaded enough, or I was at 98 and I was out. And so I was a blackout drinker. And I blacked out almost every time I drank. And I thought it was odd that the people around me, about the time I got going, was about the time the people around me started going, man, it's time to go home. And I was like, hey, we're just getting this party started. You know, I don't know what your problem is. I was a very happy drinker. I loved drinking. I was everybody's friend. I was outgoing. I was better looking. I was a better dancer. I was a better singer. I was just a better person all the way around. And I liked drinking. But the problem was, waking up out of blackouts, you never knew where you were going to wake up. And it was by the grace of God that I made it home many times, not knowing how I got home. My car was in one piece. I was in one piece. So I don't think I ever hurt anybody. But I certainly did my damage to my body, myself, and to my children. Starting at 13, I wound up pregnant at 15, gave my son up for adoption when he was born when I was 16, got married at 18, had another child, got divorced at 25. And my whole goal in life was to stay in that 99, to stay as wasted as I could without getting fired from my job. And because I needed money to live on my own and to buy drugs and to buy alcohol and to do what I wanted once I was off work. And I didn't go out to bars. I was more of a bonfire, back of the pickup kind of gal. By the time I was 21, I was I had already experienced so much of life. I just didn't really get the bar scene. I really didn't get it. And I was much more comfortable, you know, in the riverbed in front of a bonfire, like I said. But between the time after I divorced the first time, and you can tell by where this is going, because I say the first time, you know, there was a 5-year span where it was on like Donkey Kong. I mean, I was partying as hard and as fast as I could. And to blackout. And there were a lot of other substances involved in that, because, you know, I was like an anesthesiologist. I just couldn't quite get the right mix. You know, this makes me sleepy, this makes me tired, this makes me happy, this may, you know. And so I was sort of a pharmacist, you know, trying to achieve that perfect 99. And I finally, my life was so out of hand that I met a man that could have been Opie from Mayberry. He said to me one time he thought he may have took a toke off a joint in college, maybe, but he couldn't remember. And in my mind, the answers were always outside me. If you're Mr. Clean Jeans, then you're going to fix me. You know, if I'm feeling rotten on the inside, then this substance is going to fix me. And so we got married, and the things that were socially acceptable, the burners went up. You know, my drinking got heavier, my smoking got heavier, my working got heavier, my rage. All those things took the place of the illegal stuff that I had supplemented my 99 with before. And I guess we were about 2 or 3 years into it when he turned to me and said, you know, you gotta do something. I can't take this anymore. And I thought, well, if I could just get some of these problems straightened out, it'll be better. And that's how I wound up in 1991 at my first 12-step meeting. And I heard people share, and I thought, man, I'm finally home. I have found the secret. That, I mean, do other people know about 12-step? Do they know, you know? And at the end of the meeting, they did the Lord's Prayer, and I went, well, Jesus freaks, I should have known. Forget it. I'm not coming back. I don't want anything to do with these people. Blah, 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 blah. My mind just went off because, you know, my family was religious, you know, but what happened on Sunday morning was very different than what happened on Sunday afternoon. And you know, I mean, it just was. And so I didn't want anything to do with religion. And I sort of became an agnostic in that I was going to run the show. Nobody was going to hurt me. I was going to isolate. I was going to be this tough nut, you know. I was the only girl in my family, and we had a construction business. So I was constantly being told, you can't do that. You're a girl. You can't do that. You're the youngest. You can't. You can't. You can't. And so what did I do? I set out to prove them wrong. So I would kill myself to work as hard as the men and be as tough as the men. And you weren't going to see me cry, and you weren't going to see me, you know, have an owie, or I was going to be tough, you know. So then I grow up and I have boys. So, which is fine because I like dirt bikes and guns and guy things, you know. But anyway, that I got away from the whole idea of God and didn't feel like I needed God. You know, I just felt like, well, he's up there somewhere, you know, whatever kind of pickle I get myself into, he'll figure it out and it'll be okay, you know. Never, if I ever thought about asking God what he wanted for me, it was like, oh God, he's going to send me to Africa and be a missionary and, you know, he's going to turn me into something that I don't want to be and I can't handle that, so I'm just not going to ask. If I don't ask, he's not going to tell me, right? So we sort of had this non-relationship. But anyway, I started going to 12-step. I went back the next week because I didn't have any other options. And I began to realize that this program was spiritual, not religious. And I listened to other people talk about their higher power, and I just, man, I was not here to find a higher power. I was not here to find God. God was like the last house on the block, and AA was the last house on the block. And I really thought I was too good for all that. You know, I just thought, you know, I think I've got myself together more than these other people, you know. I don't think that I'd had a real first step experience, you know. I thought, well, my life's kind of unmanageable, wouldn't? Yeah. I could just make better choices. I could just wish myself to be more moral. I'm better than this. Well, what ended up happening was, I don't know, 20-some years into my marriage, you know, I was getting better. I actually made a list of all the things that I tried. Besides what it says in the big book, these are some of the things that I tried to feel better. I thought I tried AA. I didn't follow any instructions, but I went to meetings. I tried NA, SA, OA churches. I got prayed over. I got rebaptized. I did inner child work. I did psychology. I did psychiatry, diet, exercise, meditation, medication, taking a trip, not taking a trip, switching from scotch to brandy. My attempts at recovery could go on ad infinitum. And, you know, there was some relief. There was some relief. I learned a lot while I was in therapy, while I was in churches, while I was getting my head examined and all those things. I learned a lot. But my alcoholism was not cured. And things were getting worse in my marriage. I was working more than I should be because in my family, the harder you work, the more valuable you are. And so I was doing ridiculous things like not taking breaks, not going to the bathroom when I needed to, not eating when I should, just way over committing myself and working way, way too hard. And I was also volunteering at the church kitchen, and I was volunteering at the rescue mission, and I was teaching boundaries every Friday morning, and I was doing a lot of stuff. I was very busy, very busy. And one night I was in charge of the kitchen at the church, and I was so scared because I was afraid I was going to do something wrong. And the next morning I woke up and I had this horrible pain right here, and I thought, oh my God, I've used the wrong mayonnaise. I poisoned everybody in the church, and I thought that I had food poisoning. Well, it turns out that being restless, irritable, and discontent can create real physical problems. It took about 6 months and a couple of surgeries for them to realize that I had a couple of twisted bowels, internal hernias, bleeding ulcer, my iron was so low I had to go to the hospital and get infusions. And while all this was happening, my ex-husband decided he wanted a divorce because he thought I was going to die. So he would vacillate between, well, you're going to die anyway, and you're faking it. Because the doctors, I had never not worked, and I had always brought in a significant amount of money. And I didn't realize until later how much my money meant to him. But when I went to the doctors somewhere else and they finally found out what was going on, their number one priority was to take me out of pain. And so they began giving me pain medication. And I thought, I have a prescription. My doctor says this is what I should do. So I'm just following instructions. And so I thought, you know, I better go to NA because I want to make sure I stay within the boundaries of my prescription. And it wasn't long before the doctor said, you know, if you just have a half a glass of wine with dinner, you know, your stress level would go way down. You know, you would be a lot calmer. Well, in the meantime, I had left this grand custom-built home, cute little black-on-black sports car, convertible, the trophy husband, whatever. And I moved into this little bitty trailer because I didn't have any money, and that's all I could afford. And and in that little trailer started a very dark time. I started mixing alcohol and pills, and my thinking, my mental obsession, part of being an alcoholic is that you have a mental obsession that tells you you're not really an alcoholic. I'm just drinking beer. I'm just drinking wine. I'm not drinking every day. Well, by then I was drinking every day. But my mental obsession was telling me all kinds of stuff. And I didn't care if I ate. I didn't care if I had, $20, it was not going in my gas tank or in my refrigerator. I was going to Walmart to buy a box of wine and some Fireball whiskey. I mean, and that's what I did. And I would drink and pass out and drink and pass out. And the divorce was going on and my kids were getting more and more disgusted. And I was down to just me, myself, and I and my dog. Two cats, and my bed. And eventually, I started dating. I don't know where that came from, but online dating, because you don't have to get out of bed and comb your hair, I guess. And again, you know, I met this pastor, and I thought, well, he's a pastor. He's going to fix me, you know. And actually, he was the one, you know, I would watch him drink, and I would think, well, he's a pastor, you know. And the doctor said if I had all this stuff telling me it's okay to drink. And I thought, you know, maybe all those years of drinking, all those years of recovery, maybe I was just making too big of a deal out of it. Maybe I wasn't really an alcoholic. Maybe I was more of a drug addict. Maybe I was this. Maybe I was that. Blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? This relapse was the granddaddy of them all. It took me down, and it took me down quick. I drink like a pig. I'm the woman that when somebody gets up from in a restaurant and there's a half a glass of wine left over, I'm like, would anybody see me if I drank that? There's no point in letting that go to waste. I can't believe are they really leaving that stuff on the table like that? What I didn't know was that I had a physical allergy to alcohol, and that once I started drinking it, I couldn't stop. I mean, here I am living agnostically. I'm the queen of my whole life, and I'm on pills, drinking myself to blackout. Nobody wants to have any relationship with me. And I'm still thinking, I'm not as screwed up as these other people. Well, I drank for a year. And at the end of that year, all I wanted to do was die. And I was planning how I was going to kill myself. And I was convinced that my children and everybody else would be happier without me. They would be relieved if I were gone. And long story short, I didn't have enough nerve to jump off the back of that cruise ship in the Gulf of Mexico. Actually, I got a funny story about that. This was my plan. The pastor was taking me on a cruise to Mexico. And I thought, one night I'm going to say, I'll be right back, and I'm going to sneak out and jump off the back, and nobody's going to see me, nobody's going to find me, kids will be relieved, it'll be great. 2 days, I think it was 2 or 3 days before I was due to leave, my insurance guy called. And he's like asking me questions and, you know, well, where's your ex-husband and do you want to do, you know, you change your address, blah, blah. Turns out he was still the beneficiary on my life insurance policy. You couldn't get me near that rail. There was no way that guy was going to get my life insurance policy. Now, if God doesn't have a wicked sense of humor, yeah, you just go try to kill yourself, but he's getting your money. So that didn't happen. But I realized that it had to stop. I was living by myself, and I was still restless, irritable, and discontented. My ex-husband wasn't there to blame it on. Nobody else was there to blame it on. I was restless and irritable and pissed off at myself. Just me. So I don't really know what happened other than it was an intervention by God, and that was I called some friends in AA and NA, and I said, you know, I'm ready. And so they came over. I had no idea how much booze was in my house. I didn't consider the champagne that was for, you know, that's not booze. But I had quite a bit. And I'll tell you, those first 3 months, the only thing I had in me was enough to drive from one meeting to the next meeting to the next meeting. And I actually had a friend meet me at the house and put me in a bathtub and put me to bed because I didn't have enough on board to stay away from the alcohol. And about 3 months into it, I was cooking at the kitchen. And AA was having a speaker meeting. And I heard Dan Sherman speak. And he's a big deal in AA. And I thought, wow, this guy is telling a message that I've never heard before. And they said, oh, we're having an after deal at Bridge Street. So I went to Bridge, and I sat there, and I kind of heard what he was talking about. I mostly dissected him. You know, well, he's kind of attractive. I don't know, you know. I could marry him. I married and divorced him in my mind while we sat there. But I did hear some of the message. I did hear some of it. And it was enough to make me want to go back the next Thursday night and go to the primary purpose. And that was where I got reintroduced to the big book of AA. And we had read How It Works, I don't know how many times. But I didn't realize the instructions are in here. How It Works is, this is how you do it. Action. I had to do something besides go to meetings? What? And I started going through this book with somebody that taught me how to read it line by line. with the help of a workbook that was written by Dan Sherman that is not AA approved, but that's part of my story. Oh, I have some statistics here. Do you know that there are 500 promises in the first 164 pages? 500 promises. And I was the kind of girl that was like, you know what? You better be promising me, and you better be following through, because I am not doing all this crap just to not get sobriety and get freedom and get peace and joy in my life. So I did it, but I was kind of pissed off about it. And I sure didn't want to talk about God. I didn't, you know. But 142 times in the big book, they're talking about God. In the big book, it says that I am recovered 16 times. I'm in recovery 2 times. All those years that I was busy and I was doing recovery, I was recovering. I was recovering. Today I'm recovered. Alcohol, the desire for alcohol has been completely removed. I have no desire. I can walk down the liquor cabinet or aisle at Walmart and I don't even care. It does not even enter my mind. It might as well be Brussels sprouts. It's like, ooh. What? So that is a miracle, that God has just completely removed it. The difference is that I have maintained a spiritual connection with the God of my understanding. And the God of my understanding, I know so little. The less labels I put on God, the better I am. So I know that God created me. I know that God created heaven and earth and the universe. And I know God loves me. And, you know, that's about it. That's about it. If I get any more complicated than that, it turns into an argument. And I spent too many years arguing what God wanted, what I thought God was, what you are God, and you're not acting like God, and blah, 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 blah. It was all just crap to keep me from having a relationship with my Creator. This book is designed to create a spiritual experience. And when I did this work, line by line, the way I was taught, I had a spiritual experience. And I experienced God in a whole new way. In the morning, I get up and I say, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, and I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of your power, my love, and thy will of life, may I do your will always. And so, when I come to a meeting and Bill says, will you speak? I go, yeah, because I told God I would. Did I mean what I said? Yeah, I meant it. Okay, then are you going to do it, or are you going to go, no, that's for somebody else. Yeah, so that's how it works in my life. I offer myself to God and trust that He's not going to make me look stupid. And I try to help others learn the how to do this program by going through the book line by line. And by the way, the instructions are just the first 164 pages. So don't get all wound up about how big this book is, because this is the first 164 pages. That's where the instructions are. Okay, if you want to learn how to speak Spanish, you're not just going to buy a book and go home and try to figure it out. You're going to go to an instructor, you're going to get the book, you're going to read the book, you're going to study it, you're going to do what they tell you to do, and pretty soon you're going to be speaking Spanish, and you're going, dang, how did I learn that? And that's kind of what happened for me. I did what I was told, sometimes grumpy, sometimes unwillingly, sometimes not so perfectly. But I kept moving forward, and eventually people started saying to me, you know, the lights are coming on. You look different. And I was like, I do? Yeah, you do. What's changed? And all I could think of was, wow, maybe this stuff really works. So four years, my sobriety day is January 5th, 2014, and it is continuous. So anyway, thank you for listening, and thanks for asking me to share.